listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hey there, good afternoon. I'm not Tom Hartman. I'm Leslie Marshall. Many of you have heard me fill in for Tom on this show before or on my own national show, which follows Tom's show today. I hope you'll tune in. 6 hours of me, frightening, on this Thursday. Good afternoon. Joining us in the first segment and portion of this hour is Professor Francis Boyle. Professor Boyle is at the University of Illinois, the College of Law. More than a pleasure to have him with us, and we're going to be talking with him this afternoon. And by the way, you can talk with us as well. I'll give you the phone numbers later, but I really want to get to the conversation and to our guest. He is a professor at the University of Illinois College of Law. He drafted the U.S. Biological Weapons Anti-Terrorism Act of 1989, which is the U.S. domestic implementing legislation for the Biological Weapons Convention. His books include Biowarfare and Terrorism. More than a pleasure to have with us Professor Francis Boyle. Professor Boyle, good afternoon and welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much for having me on, Leslie, and my best to your listening audience, and please give my best to Tom when you see him.
I definitely will. Professor, the American media especially, I think more so than any other media outlet worldwide, does a good job at spreading fear. And right now, when we hear that somebody died from Ebola, we hear that there's a nurse in Madrid that has contracted due to human error, and we look at what happened in the hospital in Dallas, Texas, sending a man with Ebola home, cries from the American public to stop flights coming into the United States from the continent of Africa, specifically the three countries that are hit hardest with Ebola. It then starts to go off into a tangent and goes into biowarfare. ISIS is an organization, as terrorists are, that will stop at nothing to destroy, have mass carnage, have mass power to their goal, if they even are sure what their goal is. How likely is it that Ebola could be used as a biowarfare weapon, and that ISIS could do this? Because what you're talking about is taking bodily fluids and then having those bodily fluids have contact with a human being. So how likely is it, or is this all in the horror film stage?
Well, Leslie, as far as I can figure out, what happened here is that when the original Ebola was discovered in Zaire, it was shipped to Portendown, which is the UK equivalent of Fort Detrick, our biowarfare center. And then they shipped it to the Center for Disease Control in Washington. And then it appears it had been shipped to West Africa.
You say, Professor, excuse me for interrupting, but you say that this was first identified in 1976. So how did Zaire, technically the Ebola virus, get to West Africa? Isn't that over 3,000 kilometers away from where it was first identified in 76?
Right, that's 3,500 kilometers. And there's no logical explanation for how it moved 3,500 kilometers. I believe it was imported there for, you know, biological warfare research. And as I said, as best as I can figure out, the chain of transmission went from Zaire, where it was first discovered in 1976, to Britain's Portendown, which is their equivalent to Fort Detrick, and then from the UK Fort Detrick to Center for Disease Control, and then it appears it was sent by CDC to West Africa.
So since the CDC has been aware of Ebola, and you know, why are we not as a country? Why is the CDC not? Why are at least American hospitals not? And heck, certainly African nation hospitals and medical facilities and those in the medical community, physicians, nurses, et cetera, not better prepared for this emergency. I mean, the United States government has spent billions of dollars since the anthrax attacks. Isn't Ebola covered under the umbrella of one of those areas that we as a nation should be concerned about, and the international community should as well?
Well, you're certainly correct, Leslie, that since the anthrax attacks of October 2001, which were by U.S. government agents, we know that for a fact, the United States government has spent somewhere in the area of $70 billion allegedly for the purpose of protecting the American people from a biological incident, attack, call it what you want, such as this. Obviously,
so Professor, just to be clear, you say that it is clear that the anthrax attacks originated from U.S. government sources. A, give us some proof of that, and B, why would you believe, why not just believe that based on your source and your proof, but why would the United States government want to do that? Because then, you know, a little more than 8 years after, five people died, but I think more people were terrorized and stressed out by the fear that was spread as a result of this. You know, what purpose did the United States have in doing that? Because they've closed its investigation. The FBI has closed its investigation of anthrax, haven't they?
I do discuss this in my book, Biowarfare and Terrorism, that you mentioned, with footnotes from reputable sources. But it's very clear that was specially weaponized anthrax that only the United States government sources could have.
Okay, prepared. So let's say your sources are accurate, and let's say that your belief is truth, okay, which I have no way to prove or disprove at this moment in time. But why would the United States government do that? Why would they, for years and resulting in five deaths, spread this fear? I mean, what is the purpose in that?
Well, they were two things. They were, at that time, remember, the environment was right after the terrorist attacks on September 11, 2001.
Correct.
And they were trying to stampede the United States Congress into adopting the USA Patriot Act, which was basically setting up a police force, a police state, which it has done.
Yes, but Professor, correct me if I'm wrong. My political history shows me that after 9/11, both the left and the right bought into this fear, and certainly with their phones ringing, their emails, their letters, and the visits to their office from their constituents, that people had the living bejesus scared out of them after 9/11 and believed that we had and would have more homegrown terror. In other words, those planes flying in, that image of those planes falling into those towers, wasn't that enough for the United States government to have the panic they need to motivate those in the House and the Senate to vote in a manner that they wanted with regard to the Patriot Act, A? And then, B, I would think that former President George W. Bush, the small amount of intelligence that he had in his brain, wouldn't want to bring more havoc and wreak more havoc in his country while he was sitting in the Oval Office. It doesn't make any sense. Certainly for political gain, it does the opposite.
Well, Leslie, in fact, as I explain in my book, if you'd like to read it, Biowarfare and Terrorism, Senators Daschle and Leahy had put a hold on the USA Patriot Act because they knew it would set up a police state. So both of them were deliberately targeted with super weapons grade anthrax to push that through, to terrorize and intimidate them. And the news media.
But they weren't the first victims of that. And one of the reasons that they and other Democrats on the left were leery, as many of us still are, of the Patriot Act, was the violation of constitutional rights and the discrimination that might ensue that we've learned from history worldwide. I mean, hindsight is 20/20. Professor Francis Boyle, we thank you for being with us today, sir. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to be back. I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman. We're going to take your calls at 866-987-TOM. That's 866-987-8466.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Hi, I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman here. We're going to take your calls at 866-987-TOM. That's 866-987-8466. Hey, this is Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman again. How you doing? Oh, scary. You guys are seeing me without TV makeup, for those of you that watch me on national television. We're going to take your calls now. Does Ebola scare you more than ISIS? Is that where our concern should be? Is Ebola something that can be used as a bioweapon by ISIS and others? And is Ebola another thing that was taken by the government if you're standing on your grassy knoll? 866-987-TOM for radio, but for Free Speech TV, 866-745-2667 is the number. Let's start it out with Emily, who is in Atlanta, Georgia, watching us on Free Speech TV. Hi, how you doing? Good afternoon, Emily.
Well, hello there, Ms. Marshall.
Oh, please call me Leslie, Emily.
Well, Ms. Leslie, you look beautiful to me. This is the first time I've ever seen you.
You are my best friend. Thank you. You've made my day. What do you have to say today?
I mean, my God. Well, first of all, I'm a registered nurse, and I've taken care of patients, I think, with the worst diseases nobody want to have. But with this Ebola thing, this is not the first time Ebola has come up.
True.
If somebody do some research, a few years ago, Ebola was live and well in Africa. Ain't nobody said nothing. Ain't nobody said nothing. And now you got these people that got it in Africa, and you think it's not in America. Well, first of all, when they brought them doctors back, I'm sure there's many people in America that got it and have died, and we just don't know it.
Emily, is it because Americans flip out anytime anything comes into our borders and the media just, helps to perpetuate that? And then in addition to that, it's terrible, but I think we Americans care when Americans are at risk of being sick or dying, but we really don't care, unfortunately, as much as we liberals give lip service to the African nations and the people within it.
Well, ma'am, on that note, I'm going to tell you what I do for a living. Like I said, I'm a professional registered nurse.
Mm-hmm.
I've been one for quite a while, say about 31 years.
Right.
But I went from right now what I do and what I like to do is hospice. That's when nothing else in the world matters except taking your last breath.
Yes, giving people comfort. My aunt actually just passed away last week. She was in hospice, and the people did a wonderful, wonderful job. I feel that if I were in that stage of life or I were ill, that's somewhere I would want to go. Emily, I want to thank you for your call. I got to take some others, but you were awesome. Do call me again, and thank you for the compliment. Let's go to who's up next here. Will in Mineral Wells, Texas on Free Speech TV. Hi, Will. Good afternoon. Where's Mineral Wells? I used to live in Houston. I'm not familiar with that area.
It's about 100 miles west of Fort Worth.
Oh, yeah, you're outside of Fort Worth, Dallas area. Okay, Will, how you doing? Good afternoon. What's your take on this?
Hey, I was going to talk to you about 9/11. You were just talking about the anthrax.
Uh-huh.
And, one of the things with this country is nobody's addressing. There's a guy by the name of Richard Gage that's involved in engineers and architects. And there's absolutely no way those buildings came down without explosives. He has all the proof. There's numerous engineers.
Yeah, a lot of people, Will, I'm out of time, but I thank you for that. A lot of people do feel that way. I personally feel that plane didn't come down on its own. I feel they had a little help from not an unmanned drone, but definitely some kind of U.S. fighter pilot, unfortunately, to protect the president. I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman. We're going to take your calls. Keep watching on Free Speech TV, 866-745-2667. And for radio, 866-987-TOM. Hey there, I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman. How you doing? Watch me on Free Speech TV, listening on radio. I hope you'll join us. The number 866-987-TOM, that's T-H-O-M. We're talking about Ebola. We're talking about whether or not ISIS could get its hands on it or any other terrorist organization and use it as a bioweapon for biogerm warfare. We definitely use a lot of fear in the media as a tactic to get, I think, America's attention. But who do you fear more? And what do you fear more, Ebola or ISIS? Texas. 866-987-THOM is the number. Let's go next to Paul, listening on KBCS in Woodinville, Washington. We're glad to be a part of that station, too, here. Leslie Marshall, how you doing, Paul, and good afternoon.
Hi, Leslie.
Hey, Paul.
Let's think about this a little bit here. I don't know if there's anybody in the American media that really has a brain. They certainly haven't put it to work. Okay, so in the United States, we have the best medical technology in the world. In other words, we are the most capable of isolating this virus, keeping it under control. Yet people here are worried that Ebola is going to get out. It's going to be a gigantic epidemic, and everyone's going to die. Yet, okay, ISIS, who are a bunch of cats driving around in pickup trucks with machine guns mounted on the back, they have no production facilities of any kind, even to make regular weapons. That's why they're using ours, the ones that we brought over there.
Yes, unfortunately.
We're worried that they're going to get hold of Ebola, isolate it, put it into a bomb, and do all this without infecting themselves. I think the best thing for us would be if ISIS did get a hold of Ebola, and they had a big outbreak, and then would take care of him for us. I don't think that ISIS is going to be very capable of handling, Ebola virus while they're camping out there kind of in the desert. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Do they have some kind of a laboratory that we're not aware of?
Well, here are the things. Have you ever looked online at the way they're drilling? For example, I think my 6- and 7-year-old could, put something together, a makeshift thing. We are hearing that with the airstrikes, not just us, but our allies, especially Arab allies. And hello to the chick with the UAE. Isn't it good to know ISIS got their butt bombed by a chick? That they're hitting these sites. When I see the numbers of, $10 million a day, I'm finding it hard to believe. I think ISIS is very slick at their internet campaign. I think, obviously, that's why so many are joining them. Heck, even Western women are joining them. We have reports out today about that. But I think that perception with ISIS is not reality. And I think that the media worldwide, American media especially, are playing into inflating that perception. Somebody called on my national show last week and said, I know it may sound crazy, but, they're scaring us, with the beheading. They know where our fear lives, and they're playing into that. And he's not basically saying ignore them and then they'll go away, but at the same time, they're almost like a kid crying at Target with their, feet kicking, I want this, I want that, and there's a point where mommy has to walk over them and go, shut up, I'm not giving you what you want, and walking away. Now, that doesn't mean we don't continue to attack their arsenals and try and prohibit the American weapons, which we've seen clearly so many, and you can see on the side, made in the United States of America, on some of those weapons they got their hands on through those in the Iraqi military. Obviously, we have a responsibility, not we as a nation, just in the international community with our allies against this cancer, if you will. But is this cancer as deadly as we in the American public are made to believe via the media and via the fear campaign? Paul, excellent points. Thank you for your call. We continue and we go to Walter, listening on Sirius in Leesburg, Virginia. Hi, Walter. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Show.
Hey, the thing I wanted to bring up, like what the nurse brought up, how long has Ebola been around? It's been around a long time.
Yes.
And that's where we should be really putting our research dollars to try and stop these horrible diseases. Instead of cutting funds, we should be getting more funds.
Well, it's interesting that you say that. I mean, if we look, back just this past month, the president was, seeking a lot of money, and Republicans slashed the amount that the president requested for funding for Ebola. As a matter of fact, the Obama administration asked for $88 million in funding to fight Ebola, but what he got at the end of the day was less than half of that. He got $40 million from the Republicans, and the House Appropriations Committee Chairman Hal Rogers, a Republican in Kentucky, agreed to that, so we can thank at least him for agreeing. But Republicans aren't helping this with their hatchet to everything we want to spend on, and this is something I agree that we need to spend. You know another thing we need to do? I hate bugs, and so many of these viruses, so many of these diseases are spread by mosquitoes. My understanding of my research via Google and being married to a physician and talking to some of his doc friends is that Ebola is from Lake Ebola, mosquitoes that had this virus, bats that eat it, bats that are a delicacy in that area, then eaten by people who have then consumed the virus from the bats and then the mosquitoes. And we see this all the time. I almost died from a bloody parasite a couple of years ago. We need, you say the source, get rid of the damn mosquitoes. I'm serious. What good do they do? It's not like a bee that pollinates. What good do they do? Get rid of the damn mosquitoes. I think the frogs and other reptile and animal life can live without those. Thank you for your call. We're going to do a little business. We'll be right back. I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman. Join us. We'll continue our conversation throughout this hour on Ebola. Can it be used as a bioweapon? Do you fear it more than ISIS? 866-987-TOM. It's 866-987-8466.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Hi, this is Leslie Marshall sitting in for Tom Hartman, talking more about Ebola in just a moment. Happy Thursday. How you doing? I'm Leslie Marshall here on the Tom Hartman Show, filling in for him. I hope you'll join me at 866-987-TOM. That's 866-987-8466. We're talking about Ebola. Which do we fear more? And should we fear Ebola as much or fear more the lack of funding here and throughout the world? And quite frankly, the lack of preparedness we're seeing in our medical facilities. I mean, how can you send – and my husband's an orthopedic surgeon, right? And he explains to me how the ER works and the triage works. If a nurse writes down a note and it doesn't make it to the doctor, that's a problem, human error. And we see human error in Madrid with this nurse, right? I mean, seriously, as stupid as a stupid does, it's 2014. We definitely should be prepared for this. This is not the first time Ebola's come up. And with anthrax, and although we may not have enough funding research regarding medication to conquer this virus, at which approximately 50% of the people who contract it die, we definitely haven't been in the dark. This isn't like a new virus we've never heard of. And by the way, more and more viruses are cropping up. We're going to talk more about that coming up in the next hours. But let's get to the calls, and we go next to Richard, listening on Sirius in L.A., where I'm broadcasting from. Hi, Richard. Good afternoon. Thank you for joining us, and welcome to the show.
Hey, Leslie, how you doing today?
Good.
I'm looking at this situation from a couple of angles. One, we've already understood in this country that, corporate medicine, and when I say corporate medicine, I mean basically like the drug companies, they're not looking for cures to anything. They're looking for treatments because the money is in the treatment. It's not in the cure. You know what I mean?
Yes.
They don't sell something they can take once and then they don't have to worry about getting sick again. You sell them something that they have to keep coming back and buying. You know, it's the same mentality as the local drug dealer, you know, who's selling heroin or crack or whatever.
Yeah, you're conditioning, you're enabling, and you know, basic economics 101, supply and demand, right?
Exactly. And, you know, if we haven't learned anything else in this country over the last decade and a half, is that our government controls us with fear. You know, corporate America benefits from our fear.
That's true.
You know?
That's true. I will not dispute that. Although, you know, I have to say, as a liberal progressive Democrat, I definitely fear that the right, the Republicans, have a handle on that fear campaign and tactic a heck of a lot more so than Democrats do. And that Democrats need to fight harder to give facts to the American people through the media as opposed to the fear. And the media is to blame as well. If it bleeds, it leads. And if it scares you to death, that's just as good.
Well, and that's not only that, but look at our media. Our media is corporate controlled. And that's been like that for quite a while now.
And by the way, the media is very conservative. People say liberal media, talk radio alone, you have 500-600 talk stations, depending on who you ask. And, you know, less than 100 of them are progressive. About, 50-60 are progressive. And when people say that, you know, progressive talk radio doesn't, you know, work, that's BS. I've been to talk shows for 27 years. I'm still working. I've worked all of the 27 except for a few months of unemployment in between. It comes down to the corporations putting money through the media to spread the corporate capitalism, the God that they want Americans to pray to, and the conservative lies. They don't want progressive voices like Tom Hartman and myself because we speak truth. We give facts, not just fiction, and we're going to give a poll as it is, even if it doesn't benefit our opinion and our argument.
Exactly. And the bottom line is, you know, the corporations not only control the media, but they control our politicians.
Yes, so absolutely, especially with the most recent over the past couple of years, two Supreme Court rulings. Absolutely, no question, no question.
You know, they're controlling the message on all ends.
Well, this is just echoing the sentiments of the 99%, not just Occupy Wall Street, the 99%, the majority of us, you and me, who, you know, feel that we can't fight the money and the power of the 1%, and that money gives them power, and the power gives them money. It's like, which came first, the chicken or the egg?
Well, and, you know, the whole cure to this is public financing of elections. Let's get corporate money out of this, and all of a sudden, you know, there's going to be a new light shining on America, you know, that where you people like you and I actually do have a say-so again.
Wait a minute. We do have a say. I mean, look, I'm not going to lie to you. It's not easy. This is an uphill battle. We do have a say. And we don't know, just need Senator Sanders, who's awesome, and I just spoke to him on my show last week, to do this for us. I mean, really, what is it? One lone voice, the independent voice in Washington that speaks for people who are anti-corporate money going to politicians' pockets. But we can't just stay home because we know that corporate America funds both left and right. That's irresponsible. Democrats in midterm elections, minorities in midterm elections, and that includes African Americans, Hispanics, even the gay community, and women, stay home. Why do you think Republicans might take over the Senate? Because we're sitting on our butts because we go, I'm not going to vote for somebody because corporate money, you know, sometimes you got to vote for the lesser of two evils. You can't just stay home. We do have power. Our vote is powerful. I mean, look, we've seen the power of talk radio. We've seen the power of the Tea Party, unfortunately, and the Koch brothers. If you just want to look to the race in Virginia with Eric Cantor, we have a responsibility. So I agree with you, but I think we have to do everything within our power that's within our power until we can change and alter that power. I mean, if you're going to have – we have not had and we will not have for a while – because it's hard to amend the Constitution or overturn the Supreme Court with regard to Citizens United and other rulings that play into the corporatist buying our politicians. We need to show them that we, the people, there's power in numbers. Yeah, they may have numbers with money, but we have numbers with our voices and our vote. Thank you for your call, Robert, and appreciate – did I say Robert? That's Richard. I'm looking at Robert here coming up shortly. Let's go to Larry on 1360 AM in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. How you doing? Good afternoon. Welcome to the program.
Oh, you're speaking to me, Larry?
Larry, yes. I talked so fast you couldn't understand me. Larry.
Yes, you do talk very fast.
Hey, I'm a Bostonian originally. I can't help.
Well, I'm from New Jersey originally. But this is one of the things I wanted to mention, and I've been following medicine since 1993, even though I didn't really want to. But I know that the turn of the millennium, they were going to destroy all the last of the smallpox.
Yeah, but, you know, here in California, we've had things like polio, you know, rear its ugly head again. So yeah, I'm torn. I'm a mom of a 6 and 7 year old. I'm kind of torn on the whole vaccination thing. I mean, there's good arguments on both sides. I don't want my kids getting infected or infecting others, but I don't think we completely eradicate diseases as much as we feel. And quite frankly, the fact that we're destroying our immune systems, which we're going to talk about coming up in the program here this afternoon, doesn't help.
I know quite a lot about that, but I want to just say that I remember that Russia had like 5 or 6 vials, and we had 5 or 6 vials, and we were going to destroy that at the turn of the millennium because they said smallpox was eradicated. I know, and then several months later, all of a sudden, they say that terrorists are going to weaponize smallpox. It made no sense to me. I said, well, we only have, Russia's got some, we have some, we're going to destroy it. How would a ragtag terrorist organization get a hold of it, for one thing?
Well, first of all, Larry, you're believing what we're told, and I'm not saying that everything we're told is a lie, but I mean, if somebody tells me there's only 3 or 4 vials here and in Russia, come on, that we don't have full transparency with regard to that information. I don't
believe another lie that Adventist, or at one time it was Adventist, and then it was Cannot Labs. They had said, well, we don't have smallpox vaccines anymore. And then 3 months later, oh, by the way, we just found $500 million worth of smallpox vaccines in our freezers.
No, exactly. But not even smallpox, Larry. What you're doing is, and we do this often as Americans, we look at the world through an American mindset and an American lens because we're Americans. You have to remember, we're not India. We're not rural areas of places like China, Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan. I've lived in Pakistan. I've traveled to India. I've seen with my own eyes in India men who had feet like elephants, elephantitis, which in the Western world has been eradicated.
I had a waitress that had that actually in Jersey. So.
All right. So something, leprosy is alive and well. We just don't think so. We think it's only in Jesus Christ Superstar and the leper colony and that musical made for film. The bottom line is just because a government in the media tell you that we don't have smallpox, A, doesn't mean we don't have it. B, it doesn't mean that we have the supply of the vaccines. Or three, if they say they're going to destroy it, I don't buy that. I really don't buy that.
Your point is?
My point is you can't believe everything you're told with regard to diseases and with regard to weaponry and with regard to what we hold on to and what we destroy. We're not going to show our hand to the world.
I've been to Waxman's office twice with the files that I have on a vaccine in 1993. And I showed him the proof that, 22 kids died from this vaccine. And you know what Waxman's office told me? Chillax, it's going to take an act of Congress. I said, well, that's why I'm here. I have it in black and white.
So your concern is if smallpox could be threatened by terrorist groups to be used as a bioweapon, that Ebola certainly could as well.
My concern is that we're not sharing information freely, and I had information that a vaccine that they gave out killed.
Listen, I'm all into free information sharing and ideas. However, I am not into forecasting to our enemy our plans, and I think that sometimes is the danger of full transparency.
Now, I was just trying to forecast to the congressman what went awry. I wasn't trying to forecast to any terrorist, anything.
All right. Well, Larry, I'm glad that you go beyond, just showing up and voting and that you bring that.
And it didn't work. So that's what really got me the most. It was whacked.
And that's sad, but it's no surprise. Yeah, it's no surprise. It doesn't mean the power of one can't work, but sometimes you need more voices with you. Larry, thank you, and thank you for listening there at 1360 AM. I'm Leslie Marshall. We'll continue with more of your calls here on the Tom Hartman Show. I'm sitting in for him this and the next 2 hours. I hope you'll continue. We have great guests, your calls, great topics to talk about. 866-987-TOM is 866-987-THOM.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Talking more about Ebola, talking more about the money or lack of being spent for research. Can we come up with a vaccine to cure this? Hey, everybody in Free Speech TV land. I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman once again. Let's take your calls. You can join us at 866-745-2667 for Free Speech TV. Anita is watching on Free Speech TV from San Antonio, Texas. My husband's going there in a couple of weeks for a conference. Beautiful city. Hi, Anita. Good afternoon.
Hi, Leslie. Yeah, I'm not afraid of Ebola, and I'm not afraid of ISIS, but I am concerned about our healthcare system here, and I think this does illuminate, the Ebola thing illuminates the problems that we do have, especially in places like Texas, where we have so many people who are uninsured, who won't be able to go to a doctor, or they don't go to a doctor till they're so sick and they've spread it everywhere.
It's interesting you say that because I'm going to be talking about on the show later that Republicans are trying to repeal again Obamacare. And when you look at health care reform, an area that needs to be reformed is not just other states that have not signed on for the Medicaid expansion to allow people, such as in a state of Texas, to have health care benefits to be treated or to be screened for Ebola, because a lot of people with flu season coming up, this could become, mass hysteria if it isn't already in some sections, especially in the Dallas area. But when you look at the reformation of health care, it's not just about the accessibility of healthcare, availability, to have coverage for those that have pre-existing conditions, but the reformation of our system, just like after 9/11, we had to reform, if you will, security and tighten security at our airports. We need to, relook our emergency room, preparedness, not just for this, but for anything that comes at them. And we certainly have seen in Dallas that isn't the case. And we certainly have seen not in our healthcare system, but worldwide in Madrid, that wasn't the case.
No, I think we're going to have what we need is like a top down approach. And with this kind of the privatization of healthcare we have here, that is a problem because, everybody has their own little way of doing things instead of like a top to bottom approach.
Well, that's true, it's but that that takes money, and that takes cooperation. And, you know, we have a midterm election around the corner. And, you know, Republicans' goal is to disagree with and to filibuster everything the president and Democrats put forth. So that's a problem because you know this, Anita. Our politicians, especially those on the right, unless it's their kid contracting or dying from Ebola, they don't really care about a handful of Africans who might come here. They'll listen to the people and maybe ban flights coming into here. I'm not sure that's going to fully eradicate it.
No, they definitely lack the empathy gene.
Yes. No question. Thank you for your call, Anita. Oh, did you have one more? I'm sorry. You can always give us a call back. My apologies. Let's go to Jane in Lithonia, Georgia on Free Speech TV. Very quick, Jane. How you doing? Good afternoon.
Oh, I'm doing so fine. And how are you?
I'm good.
Okay. I want to make two quick points. One is about how you spoke about the spraying of the mosquitoes, but we'll make that second. The first one is with the Ebola. I mean, it's simple. You need to know how to treat Ebola and make an assessment, as in Dallas or wherever that man was at. When that man came into the ER, I guarantee you, you should have asked him first. Well, anyway, part of your assessment should always be, where'd you last eat? Where'd you been traveling? Assessment.
Absolutely. Have you traveled outside the United States in the past 30 days? Standard operating procedure. And by the way, would that have those few days have prevented his death? I'm sure that's a question the courts will consider. I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman. Hey there, I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman. We're going to continue our conversation on this issue of Ebola, fear, our healthcare system, and whether it's prepared. I think we've seen that we and many parts of the world are not. Ironically, there's a rubber plant in Africa that is, Firestone, American company, that is showing the use of their type of science and technology to be very helpful with regard to security measures to prevent contraction of the disease. Maybe we need to think and look outside the box. 866-987-TOM. That's 866-987-8466. That is the number. And let's go next to Ed, watching on Free Speech TV in Klamath Falls, Oregon. Hi, how you doing, Ed? Good afternoon.
Hi, Leslie.
Hey.
Tell you the truth, this Ebola thing, I'm not counting on our broken healthcare system to save me. I'm counting on the fact that Ebola is a tropical disease. We live in a temperate country that's busy sliding into winter. Very soon, everybody's going to be wearing long-sleeve shirts, jackets, and gloves. And then
But wait, Ed, I hear you, but have you ever watched online? It's really gross. These are the things when you have a 7-year-old son who loves boogers and farts and things. But online, if you watch the human sneeze and how far it travels and the liquid that is traveling with that, so you have people on planes, you have people shake hands, you're not hand washing enough. So I hear you, but I don't feel that the change in weather and the type of clothing we're wearing is going to stop that necessarily.
Well, now you talk about hand washing. You can't even get doctors to wash their hands between patients. Our healthcare system is severely broken, and doctors.
Well, I don't know what doctors you're talking about. My husband's a surgeon, and my husband washes his hands so much. I honestly thought maybe he needed to see somebody about it.
Oh, go to a general practitioner and watch them jump from room to room. They don't wash their hands between patients.
Well, actually, you don't always know that because there are sinks in most of the rooms in medical offices. Sometimes it's even by law, and they often will wash their hands when they come in the room with the patient or wash their hands in the sink in between. So if you're waiting in a room, you don't necessarily see that. So I don't buy that. Believe me, doctors don't want to catch what you and I have.
I'm waiting in the room with the sink. Every room has a sink, and I've never seen a doctor use it.
Well, maybe he washed his hands in the room after he saw the patient before you were in the hallway. I'm simply saying I don't buy that. We're not seeing physicians worldwide contracting
there's
this
no
and
sinks
other
in
diseases.
Hallway. The sinks are in the
Ed, we're just not with Ebola and other diseases seeing the doctors contract the virus. So I hear you, but I'm not on the same page with you regarding that.
Well, now the other thing is you can't even get a surgeon to use a checklist in an operating room. It would proven to save lives, but they refuse to do it.
I have no idea what you're talking about. My husband not only has one checklist, he has numerous checklists, and if he didn't, he wouldn't be protected if he ever was. Thankfully, he has never been sued. So I appreciate your call, but you're talking a lot of opinion, which is very subjective. It's not facts. Actually, every operating room has a protocol. Hospitals do not want to be sued. They're sued for a lot more money than the physicians individually, who can be sued separately from the hospital. Robert, listening on KPHX.com in Missoula, Montana. How you doing, Robert? Good afternoon.
I'm doing well, thank you. I called to let you know that Ebola was attempted to be weaponized before by the group that carried out the sarin attacks in Japan. They had, when they were busted and they searched their compound, they found that they had samples of Ebola. So it's not rocket science to be able to put this together. ISIS has people everywhere, and if they wanted to, they could go ahead and get a hold of Ebola. And it's really junior science stuff to propagate that virus and be able to spread it in places where there's a lot of people, airports, bus stations, wherever. It's not super ultra high-tech science. Also, in regards to what that last caller just said, I'm a nursing student, and they're encouraging people to wash in front of patients to get rid of that idea that people don't wash their hands, because hand washing is something that's super used. Also,
and by the way, speaking to your point about Japan, this was in 96, and there was a magazine that reported a worrisome case that involved a Japanese cult group called Aum Shin Ryoko, and I apologize for my poor Japanese there. They traveled to Zaire in 92, and their purpose was to collect samples of the Ebola virus. By the way, though, we do have to say for clarification that their efforts probably failed, but they do feel that it ended up killing several dozen people with nerve gas, not with Ebola. That was in Tokyo subway system in 1995.
Right. The other thing I wanted to mention is that because of our broken healthcare system, nurses are working way, way harder than what people realize. So human error is going to happen. When you have an emergency room full of people,
nurses and doctors are not gods. True. Nurses and doctors are not gods,
absolutely,
although we expect them to be.
Yeah, there's going to be human error no matter what. But
I do agree, but we can reduce.
And propagated is not rocket science.
True, but we can reduce greatly the amount of human error, A, and B, who wants to contract this themselves? I mean, most of these nurses and doctors have families, maybe children. They don't want to bring this home to them. Thank you for the call. Very good points, Robert. Appreciate that. Up next, let's go to Free Speech TV. Jerry's watching there in Palmdale, California. Hi, Jerry. Good afternoon.
How are you doing?
Good.
Yes, I just kind of want to mention, I heard that earlier caller mention about how if ISIS got a hold of Ebola, and try to use it as a weapon, obviously they'll fail miserably, and they'll end up taking out most of the ISIS people. Because
I would imagine that, and I'm not a physician or scientist with Ebola, but I would imagine that, like anything else, if a bodily fluid is outside the body, that there's a certain period of time that it must come into contact with the other human for that virus to be transferred and effective. It has to have that warm, moist environment somewhere, right, on either body. So there must be a time, and it's very interesting. Although, if ISIS can get its hand on American weapons, they can get their hands on the American suits to protect one from Ebola. You know, who knows? I don't know. Maybe they'd be more protective than some of the medical community here and abroad.
But keep in mind how they're getting American weapons. They're not coming to them directly. But if they got a hold of Ebola directly, they would have no ability to control it, and they'll depend on the American cure to save themselves, and we would have the upper hand.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate the call there. I'm Leslie Marshall. Always more to come. Sitting in here on the Tom Hartman Show, 2 more hours to be exact. I hope you'll continue to listen and to call us at 866-987-THOM.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters: Identity Guard, Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com, America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com, Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show. So please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartmann.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program.
Hey there, surprise, I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartmann here on the Tom Hartmann Radio Show. In this hour, another guest, more of your calls. If you're holding, hang tight, we'll get to those in just a minute. From MotherJones.com, food and agricultural correspondent for Mother Jones, Tom Philpott joins us this afternoon. Hey, Tom, good afternoon, and welcome to the show. Always a pleasure to have you on. You have to be on my national show someday. How are you? Good afternoon.
I'm just fine, thanks. Good to be here.
I have to tell you, this is right up my alley, and not just because I live in California with a food Nazi, as I would say, but you wrote a great piece entitled, Are Your Chicken Nuggets Ruining Your Antibiotic Ointment? And it started your piece and talking about a report that the FDA released about the gross amount of antibiotics purchased by the livestock industry in 2012. Now, to jump ahead just a bit, Tom, in the sake of time, my understanding is that back in the day, and correct me if I'm wrong, those that were farming and raising chickens and turkeys, especially turkeys, I believe, was where it first started for Thanksgiving, found that if a turkey was sick, they gave them antibiotics, the turkey got bigger, the meat was moister, and they thought, we're onto something. Started to pump our animals, chicken, for the Chicken McNuggets as an example, with antibiotics, and that's ruining not only our antibiotic ointment, but really it's ruining our immune system, which is not a good thing when you have Ebola and other viruses circling about.
Right. So what's going on is that the industry figured out several decades ago that low daily doses of antibiotics, for reasons that are still kind of mysterious, although there is some explanation now, made animals grow faster. And so that quickly became standard practice to the point where we are today, where 80% of the antibiotics sold in the United States are now going to these factory animal farms.
And you write about Chicken McNuggets, but these are going into, cows for beef products, chicken, pork, correct?
That's right. These are going into those animals. And the problem isn't so much that there's residues from the drugs in the meat. The problem is that it is creating bacterial strains that evolve to resist these antibiotics.
Right.
And so we're getting this, we're in the middle here in the United States and also in the world of a crisis of antibiotics losing their effectiveness. And it is, undeniably true that this farm use is one of the major drivers of that.
So you said 61% of the antibiotics sold to the meat industry a couple of years ago in 2012, they deemed it as medically important because they're
right.
commonly used in human medicine. But here's the problem.
Right.
I agree with you. The World Health Organization found themselves with boxes of malaria vaccines because malaria, another mosquito spread virus, malaria, the vaccines were no longer working because the malaria had grown resistant. Last year, my kids were in kindergarten, they're in first grade this year, and they got head lice. Never had that when I was a kid. I was grossed out. I found out it's much more common nowadays because, you know, kids touch each other, wear each other's hats, lay head to head in the playground. When I went to the store to buy that RID that you just put on their head, you know, their hair and comb through, the pharmacist told me, oh, no. The lice have grown resistant to it. Now, I've heard about malaria resistance. I've heard about lice resistance and experienced other resistance we see every time we come up with a flu vaccine. So the idea that we're creating superbugs and superbugs are being created by our technology and abuse of technology is not wacky science and craziness. It's reality, isn't it?
Unfortunately, yeah, you're right.
Well, so you know, it that the information is out there, that it's transparent, and that people now with labeling, I know in the state of California where I live, everybody's, you know, they want grass-fed beef, and they want them labeled, you know, hormone-free, right. Antibiotic-free, this meat does not contain antibiotics. Is that really the only recourse that the consumer and the voter has at this point?
At this point, yes. What we need to do is put pressure on the Food and Drug Administration to ramp up its game, because it controls, it oversees the food industry, and it oversees these, you know, gigantic livestock operations. And so it's kind of its responsibility to rein this practice in. And they, this problem of antibiotic use on factory farms has been known to be dangerous for decades, frankly. This is not something that people are just waking up to.
Right.
People in the scientific community have been warning about it. And the FDA finally, in 2013, made a plan to sort of wean the meat industry off of these drugs. The problem is that it's voluntary, so it's asking them to do it, but not forcing them to do it. And there's also a gigantic loophole that I can explain if you want. So it's
I want to hear about the loophole, but this plays into things like approximately 50% of those that contract Ebola virus in the world now die. I mean, it's more fatal a virus now than it was years ago when we first heard about Ebola. This plays into that, right? Because our meat is not just sold here in the United States. You know, we have chain restaurants that I won't name with golden arches abroad that have American beef products and chicken products being sold overseas, correct?
Right. And, well, there is a distinction between viruses and bacteria. So Ebola is a virus.
Right. Viruses, well, but viruses are also airborne, right. Which Ebola is not currently, thankfully.
Yeah. But we are the practices that we use to grow meat are spreading worldwide. And also, our meat is widely exported. We're huge exporters of pork and somewhat smaller exporters of chicken, but we do export chicken and beef. And so, yes, our products are getting out globally. But
now, the antibiotics are used in a preventative fashion, which in humans, doctors say never to do. I've been guilty of it. I'm rebuilding my immune system. I almost died because my immune system was destroyed when I contracted a deadly parasite a couple of years ago. And so I know a lot about this from a personal, I've been in the hospital and nearly lost my life perspective. But
right.
When we look at antibiotics used in a preventative manner, and we do it here, oh, my God, I don't feel good. Give me a Z-Pak. And a lot of doctors write the scripts, or the nurse practitioners, or somebody that
right.
has somebody in the medical facility. And that's what they're doing with the animals, not only using it to promote growth, but to prevent disease. Antibiotics really don't prevent disease. They're supposed to be treating people and animals that are sick. You're not supposed to overuse antibiotics, and that's causing a problem to the animal as well, not just to those of us ingesting the animal.
Right, but really all the meat industry cares about is making them grow as fast as possible.
True, they want want the profit, yeah.
Yeah, and so if it's causing a problem to the animal, it doesn't impact days to slaughter, then the industry's pretty much fine with it.
You know what, I wanted you to go further with this one, Tom. My brother-in-law went with a friend of his to a McNugget-making factory. Now, I'm not saying this is McDonald's
wow.
McNuggets, okay, but I'm just going to say.
Right.
And he became a vegetarian very shortly thereafter. He being the uncle to my two young kids, called me and said, you cannot let your kids eat chicken McNuggets. And I said, why? He said, because they allow this percentage of feces in the meat. I mean, so we've got antibiotics in the meat. We've got feces in the meat. I mean, and not just with McNuggets. What can Americans do to put more pressure on the FDA? Because, you know, they're not going to answer every phone call, and they probably don't
right.
care much about what we're tweeting.
Well, you know, the first thing is to seek out antibiotic-free meat products. And there's two okay. ways to do that. One of them is to buy organic, because antibiotics are not allowed at all in organic production. That means even if an animal gets sick, the animal gets sick in organic production and needs to be treated, then it moves out of organic production and it's sold into the regular meat market. And so when you buy organic, one of the things that you're sure of is that you're getting something that hasn't been treated with antibiotics. There are also antibiotic-free labels that you can look for, and
yes,
the meat will be a little bit cheaper than organic meat. And so developing a, you know, sort of a market for these products.
Yeah, I got to tell you, Tom, thank you for being with us. Tom Philpott, MotherJones.com, food and agricultural correspondent for them. Check them out, MotherJones.com. I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman. Straight ahead, your calls at 866-987-TOM, 866-987-8466. Join us.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I'm Leslie Marshall. Coming up, we'll talk about Ebola, we'll talk about virus, we'll talk about bacteria, and we'll talk about how our immune systems are being shot by the antibiotics being given in animals. Hey, this is Leslie Marshall sitting in for Tom Hartman here on the Tom Hartman Show. And let's go to the calls. Guys, is this our regular time? Yes, yes, to talk to our callers. Let's go now to John, who's watching us on Free Speech TV in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Hi, John. Good afternoon.
Yeah, I know it's the responsibility of people to inform themselves, you know, to be good voters and good citizens, but, you know, it's no wonder that people are so ill-informed about either ISIS or Ebola. And, you know, I don't know what to do about it because we have this propaganda agency called Fox News, and then we have other corporate media, even National Public Radio, the Minnesota Public Radio here, is very poor. They don't cover the issues. Like, you know, Minnesota Public Radio is supposed to be cutting edge. And in the People's Climate March in Manhattan, they called it a large march. They didn't give a specific number, but it was almost 400,000 people, you know, showed up for this march. There was a prominent Minnesota citizen who ran with Ralph Nader, Winona LaDuke. She was there addressing the United Nations. They didn't mention that. They didn't mention that the Rockefellers were divesting from the Rockefeller Foundation all of their coal and oil stock. You know, these are things, you know, people really do, I think, they're not entirely responsible if this is what we get. We get propagandized to and brainwashed. And so what do you do about that? You know, I'm not afraid of either ISIS or Ebola. Actually, the real threat when you walk outside your door is getting run over by somebody on a that's on a cell phone operating a motor vehicle or texting. And, you know, you have far more of a chance of being killed in a motor vehicle accident or being run over than you do from either the threat of Ebola or ISIS. So anyway, that's all I wanted to say.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate that and appreciate your call. Leslie Marshall sitting in here for Tom Hartman. Let's go next to Jesse in Miami, Florida. I used to live, met my husband, started my talk radio career watching on Free Speech TV. How you doing? Good afternoon.
Hi, Leslie. Hey, I'm more afraid of the reason for the ISIS and Ebola being economic injustice. I think Bernie Sanders has the idea with cooperatives. I know he supports that. And I think he should run on a platform of cooperatives. If he could say, we already use a cooperative system with the government, we just need a private system like that. If he could say, if you vote for me to be president, I would promise to pour money into businesses as cooperatives, into public banks, credit unions, anything that could get the people's money to vote for them. That's how, what do you think of that?
Well, I have to tell you that we have the ability right now to do that, don't we? I mean, we may not have the money that the corporations do and the top 1 or 2% do, but we certainly have as consumers where we put our products, not buying products that are put out in companies that are owned by corporations such as the Koch brothers, not just the products, but where we decide to put our money philanthropically. And, you know, if we want to put some of that money into a politician's pocket who we believe in and who can make a difference and be different for us than we have in Washington today. Thank you for your call. I'm Leslie Marshall. Coming up, more on the Tom Hartman Show. Hey there, I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman, taking more of your calls at 866-987-TOM. That's 866-987-8466. Are we creating superbugs? And speaking of that, Ebola, although not a bug, as our guest pointed out, it is a virus. I still feel that, you know, look, whether it's a virus or a bacteria, our body cannot fight it off if our immune systems are lowered, which are eating meat that has more antibiotics in it, whether it's chicken, beef, or pork, is contributing to. Some people might say, well, just, you know, eat fish, right? Be a pescatarian. 866-987-TOM, 866-987-THOM. Let's go to Wayne, listening on WCPT.com. It's Chicago, Illinois. Hi, Wayne. Good afternoon.
Hi, Leslie. So great to talk to you again. The last time I talked to you, you were doing that 1 hour in Chicago. You remember that?
Yes, I do. We miss being on WCPT, and hopefully we'll be back again someday. What can I say? They don't like we liberal broads on the radio much.
Yeah, I'm the one who said that they should have gave you 3 hours instead of one. Remember that?
You're preaching to the choir, my friend. What's up? What's on your mind?
Anyway, I just wanted to say a little something about this supposed Ebola virus. Actually, Ebola is much more viral and intense than this so-called Ebola virus that's out right now. There's a Oxford University professor by the name of Adrian Hill from Oxford University. He's a genetics professor, vaccine professor. Here's what he says. He says, commercial vaccines is monopolized by 4 or 5 mega companies. Those are the big pharma companies like Johnson & Johnson, GlaxoSmithKline, companies like that.
Right.
Anyway, he says commercial vaccine is monopolized by 4 or 5 mega companies. Unless there's a big market, it's not worth the while of a mega company. And there was no business case to make.
Well, that's true. That's true. I mean, you're not going to create a huge supply unless there is the demand or the need. In this case, absolutely. I mean, you know, these are pharmaceutical companies, drug companies are companies, and companies are in the business of business, and business is about the bottom line.
Right. Also, Leslie, there's a man by the name of Craig Hewlett. He used to be a special assistant to a retired U.S. Congressman, Jack Metcalf. He was a Republican out in Washington State, Jack Metcalf.
Right.
So Craig Hewlett was a special assistant to him. He's also a Vietnam vet, anti-war activist. He's an analyst and a consultant. He said just the other night, he said that the big pharmaceutical companies were asked, do you have a vaccine for Ebola? They said, of course we have a vaccine for Ebola. But if you can't pay for the vaccine, we don't want to put it on the market.
Well, Wayne, I would have to see that evidence because, quite frankly, the two Americans, the vaccine that was used by the CDC is still in the experimental stage. So, in a sense, these two Americans were guinea pigs. One, they don't have enough of that vaccine to use on the number of cases worldwide, specifically in East Africa, in the three nations that are hit hardest on that continent. And three, they don't not only have the supply, they don't have the money to do further research and create more of that vaccine. Four, that vaccine used on the Americans does not make them Ebola-free. They simply have killed the virus for now. My understanding is it will remain dormant in their bodies, and if they come into contact with somebody again, it will most likely crop up, and they may not be as successful in healing the next time around. Remember, again, experimental stage. And, you know, people may think, hey, bring it on. But when something's in the experimental stage and you've only had it used on two people and you only have a few weeks looking at the results, and remember, both people, although they're better, the male that was infected recovered at a much higher rate because each individual, the individual immune systems, we're individuals. You know what I mean? We are individuals. Look at our fingerprints. Look at our DNAs. You can give one drug to 10 people and have 10 different reactions to that medication. So, I you know, when you say we have a vaccine, there is no vaccine available. There is something that they're using currently in the experimental stage.
Okay, like I disagree. I believe they have the vaccine available.
Well, you can't just believe it, Wayne. I hear you, but you can't just believe it, sweetie. You know what I mean? We have to have, you know, hardcore information and evidence. We can't just, you know, believe that.
Vaccine out there, if it's not worth their business time. If it doesn't make business sense to them, they're not going to put it out there.
Yeah, but seriously, if the majority of people, which they are in the United States, are dying from heart disease. Well, I mean, let's take breast cancer. If you have breast cancer, you have a 96% chance of living. 96 to 97, actually. 3 to 4% chance of a fatality. That is because of the money that was put in, the research that was put in, and quite frankly, the attention that it was given, the media campaign, so that people would get preventative, diagnoses. And that is from mammograms, that is from breast exams by physicians, self-breast exams by women. We see how people today are living who have full-blown AIDS, not just the HIV virus and drugs like AZT and other drugs that people, again, have put money into. You are correct that no drug company, no research organization, and quite frankly, no government, for example, where, oh, my God, there are people, you know, dying. There are thousands of people dying in the world from Ebola. Now we've got to do something about it. They're not going to address and put money into research and finding a cure for something if one or two people, in some nation in some remote village die from it. That is a reality. That's probably how it's been since Adam and Eve. Right or wrong, you do want them addressed. Hey, we still don't have a cure for the common cold. Wayne, okay.
Okay, all right. Thanks, Liz.
All right, Wayne. All right, Wayne. Thank you for the call. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back. I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman, and give you your time. I know some of you have been holding a very long time. Be patient. I will get to you, I promise. I just want to give you your time when you get on. You can join me at 866-987-TOM. When we finish with a call, the line is open for you, 866-987-8466. I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman. More talk about virus, bacteria, Ebola. Oh, my.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Are we spending money in the wrong areas with regard to medical research, or are we just not being proper consumers with what we put in our bodies? Hey, I'm Leslie Marshall. Good afternoon. Happy Thursday. Sitting in for Tom Hartman here on the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Taking your calls, talking about a lot of things, the antibiotics that are put into our meat, and they kind of tie in with Ebola, even though what happens to us internally, that can be bacteria. Whether you get bacteria or a virus, if you get sick from either, we just can't fight it off if our immune systems are destroyed. And I feel that we're destroying them, and medical evidence proves that we are, by having so many antibiotics in our systems. Remember, we're eating it in our meat, our beef, our chicken, our pork, and then we're popping Z-Packs like candy, right? You know, I get strep throat every year as a talk show host, and I used to always say to my husband, can you write a script for erythromycin? And now we won't do it. Building up that immune system once again. Your body's a pretty amazing machine. It can handle it, but, you know, we want that fast fix, and we're a pop pill generation. It's hurting us. It's hurting our animals. And maybe that's why approximately 50% of people who contract Ebola are dying, because our meat is sold, as you heard, pork, especially worldwide. Let's get to the calls. 866-987-TOM. That's 866-987-THOM. Let's go to John. Jim, sorry, listening at KABQ.com in Portland, Oregon. Hello, Jim. How are you? Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello. The Ebola thing. We've had one death from Ebola in the United States, okay? I'm type 2 diabetic, and this is my tie-in. We have tens of thousands of people dying every year from type 2 diabetes, and there is a cure. You never hear about it, but there is an absolute 98% effective surgical cure for type 2 diabetes. So why aren't we putting some effort into that?
Well, Jim, with all due respect, and I'm very sorry that you're one of so many thousands of people in this country that have type 2 diabetes, we also have a preventative way to stop type 2 diabetes. I mean, yes, some of us are genetically predisposed, I am, to type 2 diabetes, but reducing the amount of carbohydrates and sugar. Some people go on a gluten-free diet, reducing certainly the number of sugar, and exercising. Those are preventative ways to have type 2 diabetes, become a positive on your blood test.
Okay, so now that we have it, somebody that has it, what are their options?
Well, actually, there are different books about reversing the type 2 diabetes diagnosis, also reversing heart disease, and a lot of it do involve diet. And a lot of people, say that. I know my cardiologist told me that I am to eat meat one day a month, pick a day like your birthday, to eat as much fish, fresh fruits, and vegetables as possible.
Leslie, I'm a 6-foot man. I weigh 220 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
I have tried everything to try to lose 20 pounds. Now, when I had throat cancer, my weight dropped down to 170 pounds, and my diabetes went away. Now, I don't want to get throat cancer again to take my diabetes away.
No, what did you say? I don't think the cancer took your diabetes away. I think your weight loss did. And I know that you say you've been trying. And believe me, I've been there. Believe me, I work on TV. The camera adds tons of pounds. And people meet me in person and say, oh, my God, you're so tiny. But the reality is, yes, it may be hard, but everybody has something that works for them. I've had things that worked for me in the past that don't work for me now. But the bottom line of it, consuming less and moving more, that formula does work, although it takes time.
Okay, then let's take this back to Ebola, all right?
Uh-huh.
What's the cure for Ebola? Nobody goes to Africa.
I wouldn't say that because wait a minute. Then you're only concerned with Americans contracting it. Aren't you concerned about human beings throughout the world dying from
this
disease?
No, Americans go to Africa.
Yeah, but I don't know about you. I don't care just about Americans. I care about men, women, and children who are dying from a disease that maybe we as part of the world can help to control or eradicate.
So if you could have a surgical cure for Ebola, would you do it?
If there was a surgical cure, my husband's a surgeon, and one thing he will tell you as a surgeon is there's nothing so bad that surgery can't make worse. And I think you should be very careful of a surgeon who would tell you that they can cure your diabetes. Can they reduce your weight loss by stapling your stomach or intercepting your intestines or GI tract? Yes. Is that dangerous, and are there extreme ramifications and side effects and complications for many people? Yes. The bottom line is you can reverse type 2 diabetes. You can ask any physician, whether it's a nutritionist or a cardiologist, with your diet. But losing weight is key, and I thank you for your call, Jim. I thank you for your call. Very dangerous to just say, hey, surgery. They say with children with ADHD that if you remove their tonsils, you can cure them from ADHD, or you can reduce their hyperactivity. Problem is, there's not a cure-all for everyone. There's not one cure-all for everyone. And we have to be very dangerous with that. When you have surgery and you undergo anesthesia, you are being put in an unconscious state, and one of the possible side effects is death. You should not be getting surgery unless it's absolutely necessary. If it's an elective surgery, you are electing to put yourself at risk. Let's keep that in mind. That is a reality. Let's go to Dan, listening on Sirius in Greenville, South Carolina. Hi, Dan. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Leslie, it is so refreshing to hear someone on the radio that actually knows a little bit about medicine. That 98% thing is a fairy tale. I sell an insulin delivery device. I mean, what a perfect timing for the call. And you hit it right on the head. But most people with type 2 diabetes earn it.
It's terrible because it's not all of our fault in the sense when you have things that are being put in the food and when you have the amount of processed food that Americans have been over decades conditioned to buy. I'm not trying to pick on any products here, but when you're using Hamburger Helper, if you read about the chemicals and the amount of sodium and the high fructose corn syrup, it's not just that that became the enemy. There is no other country in the world that is using high fructose corn syrup. I saw something on Facebook that said, what did they call Whole Foods back when our great grandmothers were cooking? Food. And that's a problem. We became a drive-through fast food, package it, make it quick, microwave generation. You see that spilling over into countries now like France and Italy and the UK. And what's happening? Their obesity levels are rising because they're becoming more like us.
Yeah. That really wasn't what I called, but I just had to mention that. I love it when you're on O'Reilly, by the way.
Oh, well, thank you. And type 2 diabetes, is this preventable? Absolutely. My husband and I are predisposed to diabetes genetically, and we get our sugars checked, we get our blood level checked, and we watch what we – my husband is such a food Nazi, and I'm now a believer. I fought him for years, but I'm a believer.
My wife is, too, and it is reversible if you catch it early enough.
Yes, absolutely.
The reason I called I've been listening to this show for about 2 or 3 months, and to be honest, I'm a conservative, but I love to listen to Tom Hartman. I just love his side of things.
I figured if you saw me on O'Reilly, you were a conservative.
I am, but you know what? I listen to all the different shows because I just like to get everybody's viewpoint. And for the last 2 or 3 months, the majority of the callers on this show have been saying, we don't belong in Iraq and we don't belong in Syria. That's not our fight. You know, why are we over there? We don't belong over there. And you know what? And if I say, if they're going to say that, then why don't they say that we shouldn't be over in Liberia? Why
Dan, the polls show that regardless of ideology, that most Americans like the airstrikes, don't like the trust the president to do them, but his approval ratings have come up.
Yeah.
The majority of Americans feel that we need to focus on domestic issues. They don't want us to lead alone on this. They feel it's the fight of the Arab world. And in a sense, Iraq needs to take off the training wheels and ride the bike on their own at some point. What happens is when you get the media, especially your group of gang there in this midterm election, I got to say, got to fight them over there. They're going to come over here back in the day with GW. And now with the midterm election coming up, homegrown terror. And then you hear something about a guy in Chicago. Wait, you hear something about a guy in Chicago. Hear something about a guy in New Jersey. And then you never hear about it again. Come on, Dan. Come on. We heard General Petraeus himself. You should not overestimate ISIS. Not underestimate. Overestimate ISIS.
No,
and experts have said that ISIS is not a direct threat to this country or its inhabitants currently.
Is Ebola, though?
Right now, yes. Because we have disease. Yes,
well,
absolutely.
I mean, well, why is it any more of a direct threat than the terrorists who are already in this country?
But there were terrorists in this country before 9/11. We just woke up to that fact on 9/11, and then we kind of went back to our lives, and we wake up again now with ISIS. Please. Terrorism's been here since Adam and Eve. We just weren't in the game.
Yeah, but why do we fall asleep is the question, because another 2/11 is coming.
I shudder to think you're right, but I fear you might be.
Well, I know, and that's what I'm worried about. I'm worried about Ebola, too. I'm worried about both.
Well, then maybe, Dan, left and right with ISIS, left and right with terrorism, we should put the damn politics aside, forget it's a midterm election, and do what's in the best interest of the American people and the safety here and abroad. Stop spreading Islamophobia, stop blaming a religion, and stop blaming, as I wrote in my article for U.S. News and World Report, which comes out every Wednesday, and I wrote yesterday, Leon Panetta is guilty of this as well. This is not how did they come about, where did they come from, why did they come, who's to blame, Obama, Hillary, coming out of Iraq. That's not the issue. The issue is they are here, what do we need to do going forward to fight them? The issue isn't putting out polls as to boots on the ground. The issue is what do we as part of the international community and the world fighting this cancer together need to do? And until we do that, they're going to win. And by the way, they want us to blame Islam, because if they do, then eventually all these Arab nations fighting with us are going to be fighting us against us. We're going to take a break. I'm back. I'm Leslie Marshall sitting in for Tom Hartman. I hope you'll join me, 866-987-TOM. That's 866-987-THOM.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Hey, I'm Leslie Marshall sitting in for Tom Hartman. More to come, more calls. We're talking about ISIS. We're talking about Ebola. We're talking about antibiotics and our immune system. Hey, I'm Leslie Marshall sitting in for Tom Hartman, and I hope you're watching me on Free Speech TV. You can call us on FSTV, 866-745-2667. Let's go to the calls in Valencia, California. Isaac's watching on Free Speech TV. Good afternoon, Isaac.
Oh, hi, Leslie. Thanks for filling in for Tom today.
It's always a pleasure. I'm a big fan of Tom's and glad to be here with a different audience than mine and some spillover from mine. Isaac, what's your take on all these issues we have on the table?
Oh, well, the reason I called is a topic from a caller about an hour ago concerned about her doctor's hand washing and the failure of medical professionals to use checklists. And Dr. Atul Gawande, he's a Harvard medical professor, this last week has been doing a publicity circuit on his new book, Being Mortal. And his prior book was called The Checklist Manifesto.
Mm-hmm.
And he was on The Daily Show and Democracy Now! This week. So I'm thinking that caller was, had that book in her mind.
Well, also the New York Times put out an article, and there are different studies that show that. But you have to look at the studies that actually refute that. And in addition, you need to look at the states and the level of litigiousness, specifically with malpractice lawsuits. Now, I live in California, and that's where my husband practices orthopedic surgery. His parents, who are now retired, OB-GYN and general surgeon, live in Florida, one of the highest malpractice lawsuits in the United States, the state of Florida. Those doctors aren't going to do anything to risk having their medical license pulled or their hospital privileges pulled. In surgery specifically, you are entering into a sterile environment. And if you walk in as a surgeon and your hands aren't washed, you're not in that room alone. You have an anesthesiologist. You have an assistant physician. You have nurses. You have techs. I mean, the list goes on. There's like a dozen people in the room. Everyone in that room is responsible to make sure that that environment is sterile. Otherwise, the patient's life is at risk, and quite frankly, their jobs are at risk. So, I'm not saying that I'm taking it with a grain of salt. I'm saying that's one person's book, one person's opinion, and there's one study. I've seen others that say the opposite and refute that.
The using the checklists are great. I'm glad to hear your husband, the surgeon, does. Some hospitals are aware that healthcare professionals are forgetting to wash their hands. And in fact, Cedars-Sinai in Beverly Hills, which is often considered one of the top hospitals in the nation, they actually have signs in the rooms encouraging patients to feel free to remind their doctors and nurses to wash their hands. So in some places, it's not happening as much as it should. And if the caller is concerned that for her health, I'd encourage her to mention, Cedars-Sinai asks patients.
That's a very good point. We shouldn't have to. We shouldn't have to. It's like when you go to a restaurant and you're in the bathroom, it says, please wash your hands before going to work. It's like, what the? But, absolutely. You have a responsibility. I mean, there are people that think, well, I can't ask my doctor. I can't disagree with my doctor. Ask my doctor that. They're not gods. They're physicians. Thank you for the call. Let's go quickly. Let's go to up next. Okay, we're going to be doing our break, so we don't have enough time to do the next call. But we will continue to take your calls, those of you watching here on Free Speech TV and everybody else listening to the Tom Hartman Show. For Free Speech TV calls, be sure to dial into 866 or punch up 866-745-2667. It sounded like a dinosaur there, didn't I, with that dial-up? Woo! I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman. We'll be right back. I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman. Glad to be back sitting here. And somebody that I talk to on my show, not every day, but a lot, from our nation's capital, White House and Washington correspondent, Victoria Jones from Talk Radio News Service. Victoria, good to talk to you a little earlier. How are you this afternoon, and what's going on? Hello? Oh, my bad. Yeah, see, I knew I'd screw up. I was doing so well with the calls. Victoria, my bad, forgot to punch up your line. Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. The House Appropriations Committee today approved an additional $700 million in federal funding for the multi-agency effort to combat the Ebola crisis in West Africa. Last month, the president requested authority to reprogram $1 billion to go toward the Ebola crisis, but it's been held up by various senators because they wanted a detailed program from the Pentagon on how the money would be spent. The Pentagon is going to be providing briefings this week. They've already given some details of that, and they will be briefing congressional staff on how they intend to spend the $1 billion. So they are getting $700 million of that. Also, the director of the CDC, Dr. Thomas Frieden, said today, I would say that in the 30 years I've been working in public health, the only thing like this has been AIDS.
Now, speaking of that, Victoria, we've been talking about that here on Tom's show as I'm sitting in for him this afternoon. We've been talking about, one, some people are saying there is a vaccine, there is a cure, that pharmaceutical companies could come up with a cure. But the reality is, unless you have the money, which Republicans have cut the $88 billion that the president requested in half to $40 billion, you need the money to have the research, and you need the money to create more and manufacture more of the currently just experimental level drug for Ebola. Because currently Ebola is not curable, just treatable, correct?
That's right. Currently, it is treatable. It's not curable. And it's not something that a massive amount, my understanding is, of research has been done on, because there are outbreaks. It's been sporadic. It's not something that's there all the time. But now there is much more of an effort being put into the research on it. In fact, the research is ongoing as we speak. And as far as I know, there is no vaccine. As far as I know, there is no vaccine that is mysteriously being held back.
You know, one of the front page or top, you know, five news items today is how Americans want to ban flights from three most hardly hit and infected Eastern African nations from the continent of Africa from coming to the United States. Are we going to see travel restrictions to and fro Sierra Leone, to and fro some of the other African nations, or maybe the entire continent at this point going forward? And is this something that is falling along party lines? Ebola obviously doesn't discriminate between Democrat and Republican.
It's falling along party lines to some extent, although you've seen Governor Rick Perry, Republican of Texas, saying that he does not support a travel ban, and he's been on the front lines of this with the Dallas case.
Now, to me, Victoria, I would think a guy like Rick Perry would. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Because, I mean, he's governor of the Lone Star State that's wanted to secede in
yes.
the past from the entire country, get out of the union, wants to build a fence around Texas and a fence down at the border. Why is Governor Rick Perry, of all people, saying no, no travel ban? Or is he getting big checks from the airlines when he is running for any office, governor or president?
He's saying that it's important that you can get the aid workers in and out of those areas.
I hate to say that I agree with him on that, but can't we have specific flights that are for aid workers only, and that they go through a screening? But with regard to business or tourism, that's got to be put on hold, or God forbid we stop any kind of business.
Well, it may come to that at some point. It's not coming to that yet. As you know, on Saturday, they will start the increased screening at JFK Airport in New York. And then next week, there will be increased screening in Atlanta, Chicago, Newark, and Washington Dulles.
I was surprised, living in Los Angeles, that LAX was not on that list. But then when I looked up flight patterns, if this had to do with Asia, LA would definitely be on the list, top the list. But not
right.
as many flights go direct nonstop. They do go through New York, et cetera, although there are some direct nonstop from LA to East African nations.
Right.
When they talk about they're going to be screening, can you give folks an idea of what individuals coming from those countries will be you know, what they'll be subjected to, if you will, at the airport
yes,
when they get off those planes?
Yes, it will be Guinea, Sierra Leone, and Liberia, and they will have their temperatures taken with a sort of gun, infrared, with an infrared gun, like a meat thermometer that doesn't touch them, a non-contact meat thermometer type gun. And if they test positive, they will be handed over to a CDC official, and I don't know what happens to them after that. And if they test negative, they will fill out a questionnaire, and they will be requested to take their temperatures daily during their visit to the United States. They have to give their contact information also.
If they comply. The other thing is, with viruses, we all know this, you can, you know, the fever doesn't always start before the virus. And I would imagine Ebola is the same way. I mean, even if there's always a fever associated, you could technically be contagious before a thermometer registers that you have an elevated fever.
No, you can't be contagious until you've got symptoms. And Duncan was not showing any symptoms when he arrived.
Exactly. Exactly. That's my problem. But he died. And
yes,
very soon
died.
After.
he died. And so questions are now being asked by the family and by others as to whether when he went first to the hospital on the 25th and was turned away, came back 3 days later, if he had been admitted initially, could he have survived?
Yes, definitely a question I would be asking, and I hate the level of litigiousness that we have, but I think I definitely would be calling a lawyer if I were involved with that case, if I were the family
yes.
Related to that man. And one last thing here, Victoria, is Ebola more of a threat to Americans than ISIS, yes or no, via Washington and what they say, our nation's capital and our president?
They are not saying that it's more of a threat than ISIS.
Okay. Thank you. Victoria Jones, live from our nation's capital, White House and Washington correspondent with TRNS Talk Radio News Service. I'm Leslie Marshall sitting in for Tom Hartman. We have one more hour with him and then 3 hours of my national show. Oh, my God. Torture for Republicans, huh?
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hey, how you doing? Hour three with me sitting in for Tom Hartman. I'm Leslie Marshall. This is the last hour, but my national show comes up 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern, so you can check it out on all of the, I think, the same outlets as Tom, except, of course, it would be LeslieMarshallShow.com/stream. And in this hour, we're going to continue with your phone calls. But we're also going to talk with somebody who's been on my show, I think, is Igor Volsky. Igor is managing editor of Think Progress. He's also co-author of Howard Dean's Prescription for Real Healthcare Reform. More than a pleasure to have him with us. Igor, thank you for joining us. Good afternoon. How are you today?
Good, Leslie. Thanks for having me.
And thanks for being with me, as I said, in for Tom. Okay. How many times do Republicans have to threaten shutdowns, over the Affordable Care Act, and yet they're doing it again? I know there's a midterm election around the corner. I mean, we're nearly a month away. But let's be honest. This is not the top box even Republicans are checking. So why are Republicans doing this? They know the American public, regardless of their ideology, do not want a shutdown. And quite frankly, right now, the Americans are still concerned about the economy and jobs, and they're really concerned about ISIS and Ebola. I don't see Obamacare on that list, Igor.
Yeah, it's a bit unexpected that you have this group of 14 Republican senators led by Marco Rubio, who, of course, since his big immigration debacle, is doing all he can to appeal to conservatives.
So now before it was like, please notice he's Latin, and forgetting the fact that Cuban Americans are, you know, one of the smallest Latin groups in the country, one, and they vote Republican. But two, let's forget the last name's Rubio, and he can say hola and gracias, what he's supposed to on cue. Now he's sort of like, look, I'm truly one of you. Let's forget everything I said about immigration reform, and let's tackle Obamacare, right? Is it a diversion?
Well, and he also, says he represents the Latino constituency. Certainly that's going to be one of his big selling points if he runs in 2016. But Latinos would benefit disproportionately, of course, from the benefits of the Affordable Care Act, and he's working so hard to diminish it. So he writes this letter to the House Speaker urging him not to pass any funding bill for the government in the lame duck when they all come back after the midterms that includes funding for this obscure little provision in the law that nobody has ever heard of, because he claims that it's some kind of taxpayer bailout to insurance companies. It's not really. It's just kind of a stabilizing mechanism that allows insurers who kind of underpriced their product not to lose money in the first 3 years of Obamacare as they, you know, try to guess where to price their premiums. He considers that a bailout because eventually the government may have to use some taxpayer money to shore up the program, et cetera, et cetera. And so he's been on this crusade against this little itsy-bitsy provision for a very long time. But, you know, you ask why they're doing this now, given the fact
that you read my mind. Why are they, why are they doing this now? And this isn't just Rubio. Yeah. There's 14 of them, right?
There's 14 of them. And you heard them try to do this earlier. You know, Mitch McConnell a couple of months ago floated this idea of a government shutdown at some point down the road. I think this is really a strategy to get the red base out, to get the conservatives out into polling booths. That's what they're going to need to win those key Senate races, to regain the Senate. I think that's the strategy.
But the goal of this measure was to stabilize the healthcare market and keep premiums level, correct? I mean, so in other words, aren't they hurting Americans or threatening to doubly with A, a shutdown, and then B, not keeping premiums level?
Well, sure, yeah. I mean, but that doesn't matter. I think what matters here is the visual or the, you know, the perception you're putting out there that you're still hitting the president over the head with this Obamacare thing. You're not backing down. You're going to repeal it root and branch, as Mitch McConnell likes to say.
Why, now we talked about, however, what good does this do? This doesn't help them, you know, in Kentucky, where Mitch McConnell now, unfortunately, is leading. This doesn't help them to defeat, you know, Kay Hagan. I mean, this isn't really going to help in those, you know, hotly contested reddish, purplish colored states where Democrats and Republicans are pretty much neck and neck. And certainly we have seen, depending on the polls, whether it's 49% or 52%, and that seems to be the spread as to who is up with regard to keeping or takeover of the Senate. So isn't this a waste of time, energy, money, and you know, really, yes, I understand, you know, going into a lame duck session, but to me it's really a lame way of going about something when they could use their voices, their names, their power, and their money, and those writing checks money to do something to gain seats. Look, as a Democrat, I'm happy that they're not, but they could.
Well, you know, I'm not in the business of advising Republicans, but I imagine that every race is different, and in every race you're going to have different pressure points that a candidate feels he has to hit to bring his or her voter out. Certainly in Arkansas, you have somebody like Mark Pryor, the vulnerable senator, finally making this pitch for Obamacare because his internals show that voters resonate with that message. You go up to Alaska, where Mark Begich is fighting for his political life. Well, in Alaska, premiums are going to increase some 20%. They're 20 to 30% because they have a crazy insurance market up there. And so you have the GOP hammering Obamacare, hammering that it's going to increase costs for families. So it really depends on where you look, what that race looks like, and I think they're doing it for a purpose. If they didn't think it would work, they'd move on to something else.
Let's talk about something else, speaking of moving on, but with regard to health care, and let's also talk about the timing of this. Walmart says it's going to stop health care benefits for some of its part-time workers. These are people that are working less than 30 hours a week. And, of course, they go out all out to specifically point to and blame the Affordable Care Act for their decision. Walmart, as most people know, is the biggest private sector employer in the United States.
Yeah, and this, and on one hand, isn't terribly surprising. We've seen this trend, particularly in the retail sphere, of big name brands like now Walmart, they join Trader Joe's, others who say, look, now that we have the Affordable Care Act in place, we have those exchanges in the marketplaces where people can finally buy comprehensive coverage on their own without their employer contribution, we're stepping back, and part-time workers will help you, as Walmart says, find the right insurance plan, but we're no longer going to provide it. And, you know, I think for some people, this could prove as a benefit, because in some cases the coverage they're going to find on the exchanges is going to be far more comprehensive than the policies that Walmart offered or another retailer offered. But it's, I think, part of this larger shift that we're going to see as the law is implemented of insurance moving from something that's locked to your job, tied to your place of employment, to something that's portable that you can take with you from job to job. And certainly it's disruptive when it's done, you know, kind of with a flip of a switch, as we're seeing now. But over the long haul, I think it's probably a more sustainable model than what we have in this country, which is really a relic of World War II.
Very true. This is a wildly successful company. Their own corporate fact sheet boasts that for the fiscal year that ended in January of this year, they increased their net sales by 1.6%. That's $473.1 billion. They returned $12.8 billion to shareholders. So they make more money, but they can't afford this. So we know that's a bunch of bumpkiss. Do you think, speaking to that very quickly, because we have less than 60 seconds, do you think this also forces some states that have not expanded Medicaid to sign on for the Medicaid expansion? Because there, you know, some people have to have that option if they're not going to go onto the federal exchange.
Well, it really should be Walmart's role to lobby those states to expand Medicaid so that their workers have an affordable option. The workers are now pushing off. I think they should use their muscle to make sure that happens.
Absolutely, and we as consumers need to know not to shop there. Does anybody? How do they make so much money? Who's shopping there? Must be those Republicans. I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman. Your calls at 866-987-TOM, straight ahead.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I'm Leslie Marshall. Coming up, your calls and more with me. I have 3 hours of my national show coming up. Check it out at LeslieMarshallShow.com/stream. Hi, I'm Leslie Marshall. How's everybody there in Free Speech TV land? Good to see you as well as hear you. Or you can see me, I guess, right? 866-745-2667 is the number. I'm sitting here for Tom Hartman. Let's get to the calls. I know a lot of you have been very patient in holding, and I thank you for that. Carl is in New Hampshire watching me on FS TV, Free Speech TV. You are in where in New Hampshire? I'm from Boston. I should know every single nook and cranny of that state. Where are you from, Carl, in New Hampshire?
This is Fitzwilliam, New Hampshire.
Fitzwilliam.
In the Manadoc region.
Yes, yes, yes. I actually have heard it now. I should wear my glasses with the screen. I'm bad. Hey, Carl, how are you? Good afternoon. What's your comment on? We talked about a lot of things today.
Well, the thing I saw in the news this morning, it was the airline workers.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering if you feel like they kind of dropped the ball on them, or is this, you know, are they just being, you know, overreactive? Because when I saw it, I thought, I smacked myself in the head and said, wow, here's something I hadn't even thought of.
Well, quite frankly,
airline workers will have to clean up the airplanes coming from that.
Well, not only that, who are coming. I don't know. I'm not touched by a flight attendant. Remember, you need to touch not just the person, their bodily fluid, but they do pick up napkins that are used on your mouth, which has saliva, which is a bodily fluid. I personally think we're overreacting. We've had one man come here who has died, unfortunately. I think that either limit or, you know, restrict or cancel for a time period, let's say 21 days, the flights, and have screening on both ends of those East African nations as well as ours. Somebody had talked about aid workers. And that was a concern. But, you know, certainly my husband's worked with Doctors Without Borders. You have a different plane. Sometimes they're not on a plane with other commercial passengers. So that is possible.
Okay, well, that makes me feel a lot better. And, again, you know, it's just another reason for more Obamacare, man. More national health care. We've got to expand.
Exactly. Thank you. Thank you. I cannot believe how stupid Republicans are, you know, which is they're trying to, you know, attack an aspect of the Affordable Care Act. This is a time when we see that, hey, we need more people need more health care. You know, come on, please. This is absolutely ridiculous. Thank you for your call, Carl. Let's go next to Paul in South Lyon. Are you South Lyon or South Lyon, Michigan, on Free Speech TV? Good afternoon.
South Lyon.
Okay, good. Yeah, I'm trying to be a Francophile here, right, Paul? How you doing? Right. Good afternoon.
Good. How you doing? It's great to talk to you again.
You too.
I want to say that you are absolutely right about the importance of this election. The Koch brothers and their puppets, the Republican Party, control us every single day, except for one day every 730 days, and that's Election Day. That's mm-hmm. the one day where we control our own future. And let's not forget that the Republican Party gave us Citizens United and Hobby Lobby. All the Democrats on the Supreme Court voted against it.
Mm-hmm.
And the Republicans are blocking a raise in the minimum wage and mm-hmm. equal pay for women. The Republicans are blocking the creation of millions more jobs and infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
The Republicans are trying to let big polluters destroy our planet.
Yep.
And the Republicans are trying to take away women's rights to control their own bodies.
And do not want universal background checks that could save some lives, perhaps, on our schoolyards and in our schools that we have, unfortunately, been victim of. Paul, I'd vote for you. That was very well said, my friend, in a very brief amount of time. Awesome. That's called a post. I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman. More to come on his program. Thank you for joining me. Don't go away. We'll get to more of your calls in just a moment. I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman. Welcome, welcome back. Let's get to your calls at 866-987-TOM. That's T-H-O-M. And for Free Speech TV, 866-745-2667. Let's go to Greg, who's listening on TomHartman.com. Out of Brooklyn, New York. My mother's from Bay Ridge. Brooklyn's in the house, y'all. Hey, Greg, how you doing? Good afternoon.
How you doing?
I'm doing good.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, by the way, that I agree with you about, I am also concerned about Ebola and super bacteria in the future. I think what you mentioned earlier in the show, I think that people are being screened through airports. I mean, the virus has an incubation period. It would be much smarter to screen people back in their home country 2 weeks before they get on the plane, and then again when they get on the plane, so you make sure that you catch.
Absolutely. That's what I was saying. I agree with you 100% because, you know, there are windows of opportunities on both, and prevention's always key with anything in medicine, and it can't just be the people coming here that we're doing something. There needs to be due diligence on both ends by both governments.
Exactly. But I wanted to talk about analyzing something else epidemiologically, which is basically what I guess Bill Maher was talking about Islam, and I think Islam as a religion is totally the wrong target to, you know, as Christianity or Judaism or religion. But Islamism, the idea that you should run a society based on principles of Islam, is, I think, a dangerous idea in the sense that, let's say, communism was also a dangerous idea. And
communism was not based on God. More people have been killed in the name of God than any other. And quite frankly, I think that as Americans, we're pretty ignorant to that religion and that culture, and let me tell you how I am not. I am a product of a Jewish and a Christian parent married into a Muslim family. I have lived in Pakistan. I have been to Iraq. I have been to Afghanistan. I have been to Jordan, Egypt, and lived in Israel. And I've been to the Palestinian territories, the West Bank and Gaza. And I've read the Quran cover to cover. So first of all, a perversion of any religion is just that, a perversion. Whether you look at the perversion of Mormonism with the people being married to 56 women and sleeping with 13-year-olds, and we make them celebrities on TV, the guy with the three wives, or whether it's terrorists. These people are not religious, like the president said, and I agree with him. No God condones this. The big three religions, Judaism, Christianity, Islam, all believe in the Ten Commandments, one of which is thou shalt not kill or murder, depending on which translation you believe. That is the bottom line. You know, when people say, oh, Sharia law, this and that. Iran, perverts Islam. Saudi Arabia, Wahhabism, perversion of Islam. Sharia law, perversion of Islam. If you read the Old Testament, and I've also read the Old and New Testament cover to cover twice, if you read the Old Testament, we have extreme amounts of violence, and not just with Israel. It is very common. And when we talk about infidels, please, people, read it and read what it's in context of. Muhammad and his followers were being persecuted for their religion by four tribes. The infidels they are referring to in the Quran are the four tribes. Don't believe it. Look it up. Read it for yourself, as my mother would always say. So for us to attack Islam is very dangerous because you have to remember we don't understand. Again, I've said it before. I'll say it again. We're looking at the world through an American cultural mindset and lens as Westerners, many of which you have never studied, never lived with, never understood these cultures because we haven't traveled there. We haven't spent time there. We haven't lived there. And I have. And I can tell you that in these countries, when there is a call to prayer 5 times a day, these people drop to their knees. Now, this is not, Allahu Akbar is not a fight, something you yell to go kill people. It is actually God is great. It's like saying praise the Lord for a Christian. So when these people drop to their knees five times a day, their diet, their lifestyle, although different country to country, this is a core, not just belief for them, but part of their society. If you say, you know, it's not healthy to have a country, you know, with Islam, well, I would agree. I don't think, because I love this country. I think it's great that we have so many religions. But Israel is a Jewish state, you know, and we're okay with that. I mean, Israel is a Jewish state, and if you're Christian or Muslim, you know, or anything but Jewish there, you're going to feel uncomfortable. And I can say that because I've lived there. So the reality is, it is not about these countries, because there have been Muslim countries that for years have lived in peace. It is, again, an overwhelming minority of people who are perverting a religion. And by the way, ISIS has killed more Muslims than any of the religion. We look at and seem to care more about a British journalist aid worker and two American journalists beheaded. Did you know that two Jordanian journalists were beheaded? No, because we don't seem to care about anybody other than us, Great Britain, maybe France, you know, Canada, you know, and really that's part of American ignorance and looking at the world again through an American lens.
I think I agree with pretty much everything that you said. I actually, with your background, I wanted to ask you what your thought is. If you go on Wikipedia and you look at religious state, state religion, you're going to find that the vast majority of the countries are Islamic countries. I have no problem with Islam. I have no problem with Christianity, with Judaism. I think that all these religions in the past interpreted their religions much more strictly, but Judaism and Christianity found themselves among secular governments, and slowly their influence has gone down. With Islam, though, you have many countries that are built around the religion, and yes, Israel is a Jewish, in a sense, a Jewish state, but also Judaism, it's not based around Judaism, it's based around Jews as a people and have religious freedoms for others. Let's say Saudi Arabia.
No. I think if you were Palestinian and Muslim, especially, even Palestinian and Christian, you would debate that freedom if you've ever been there or lived there as I have. And I'm saying that as half Jew. I'm saying that as a half Jew, okay?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. It definitely has political problems. I mean, I think they're more of a political character, but I don't think religion enters into it as much as it does in Saudi Arabia or Sudan.
Well, Saudi Arabia is very different. Saudi Arabia is the only country in the Arab world that practices, not just the Middle East, the entire Arab world that practices Wahhabism. And we have to remember, just like Christianity has, Baptists and Pentecostals and Lutherans and Methodists, so does Islam have different sects. For example, George Clooney just married a Muslim. Most people don't know that. She is a Muslim from Lebanon. She is a Druid, which is another offshoot. Parsis, mostly Persian, another offshoot. I mean, if you study religion, which I have, because it interests me, and you study history tied into religion, what's happening now has happened back. Now, when you talk about progression, there's no question. But one of the reasons a lot of these countries are able to oppress and brainwash their people so easily is the people are extremely poor. They don't have cell phones or internet. They're not living in the same world we are, quite frankly. Literally. Again, us looking at this through an American mindset. I'm Leslie Marshall. More to come on Tom Hartman's show. I'm sitting in for him. I'm glad you're joining me. Continue to. We'll be back to more of your calls right after this.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Hey, I'm Leslie Marshall. More to come, more of your calls straight ahead. And if you like what you hear, join me in the next 3 hours for my show at LeslieMarshallShow.com/stream. I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman this afternoon on Tom Hartman's radio show. You can always catch me on my show coming up in the next 3 hours that follow. You can listen online on our stream, LeslieMarshallShow.com/stream, and for many of you on the radio right here. Let's get to your calls, 866-987-THOM, and for Free Speech TV, 866-745-2667. Lots of things we're chatting about. And Eddie's listening on Sirius in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Eddie, good afternoon. I think you wanted to talk about Ebola and protecting our border, correct?
Yes, ma'am. How are you doing?
Good.
The reason for my call is because I think that right now I know that the border, it's the Wild West, now, you can basically just march across the border, but what happens if there's...
Well, I wouldn't agree with you, being a little closer to the border in Southern California than you are in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Not true. You can't just walk across. Although there are people that walk across. I mean, there are many that are detained, and it's not as easy. And by the way, even if we built a fence or a wall, some would be able to walk across as well.
Yeah, I understand that, but what I'm getting at is what is going to happen if there's a major Ebola outbreak in Central or South America? Where do you think all those people are going to go to?
Well, I don't know. Why would they come here for medical care? You mean better medical care?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, exactly that. I mean, that gentleman who came over here from Africa, obviously, mm-hmm. he knew that he probably was infected.
I don't think that's fair. I don't think that's fair to say. He was coming here to visit family. There was an occasion he was coming for with his family, and he didn't have a fever when he was checked at the hospital. So if you don't have any symptoms or you don't feel sick, why wouldn't you travel?
Okay, but when he was in Africa, he was helping that young lady who was pregnant. He took her to the first hospital. He was denied care. He took her to the second hospital. He was denied care. And he was with her when she died.
Right, but you have to, again, looking at the world through an American lens. Did you know that most of the countries in Africa do not believe that you can catch AIDS through sexual contact? And do not believe that a condom can prevent the spread of AIDS. Why? Misinformation, lack of education, and sometimes governments giving out erroneous information that their people believe, not highly educated people. He may not have known what she had, and B, he may not have known how he can contract it. And it's not his fault. They were turning people away, and this is part of the problem that there. And by the way, he was turned away in the United States for care, wasn't he?
I know, but then why did he lie on his application when he was coming into the country if he was exposed to anybody who might have had Ebola?
Do you think he knew that she had Ebola? If you bring somebody to the hospital, do you know what they have?
Do you know that he didn't know?
I have no idea, but I mean,
I think that we should definitely secure the border to prevent, first of all, anybody who's coming over here.
Well, he didn't come through Mexico. He came through the airport.
I understand that.
I think you're being paranoid.
Well, I don't think so, because what...
Yes, we've had... how many people have we had die from Ebola in the United States?
One.
Right. How many people have we had die from heart disease in the United States?
Oh, I understand that, but we're
How many people have we had die from cancer? How many people have we had die from AIDS? How many people have we had die at the hands of a gun? How many people have we had die from car accidents, plane crashes? I mean, technically, Ebola and terrorism are a lot lower on the list than those.
Okay, so you're saying that we're fine with the way the border is being handled right now?
I'm not worried about the border. I do think it's important for us to screen people coming from the three East African nations most severely affected on both ends, as they are proposing to do, and they're starting to do right now at the airports that they have a lot of East Africa travel through. I'm comfortable with that currently, yes.
Okay. All right. Well, I disagree with you, but that's fine.
Okay. It's okay for us to disagree. You know what it all comes down to, Eddie, is we're all just afraid to die because none of us know what the heck happens. We know what we believe happens, want happens, hope happens, but we're all just afraid to die, and we're all going to die. And if we can wrap our heads around that, then maybe we can think more clearly about the ways and the percentage of how many people are dying by Ebola, as an example. Over 3,000 people, that's approximately 50% infected. But when you look at the population of the world and the population of Africa as a continent alone, it's, I don't want to say a drop in the bucket. Those are 3,500 people, human beings. But we've had one man here die of that. The media is doing a great job hyping it. Let's go to Tom, watching on Free Speech TV in Sheboygan, Wisconsin. Hi, Tom. Good afternoon.
Hi, Leslie. How are you doing today?
Good. How are you doing? I want to hear from you, Tom. I understand you had a personal experience you wanted to share with us.
Yes. In 2003 or so, I was diagnosed with ulcerative colitis, and I did what the regular medical doctor said I should, and it was not always working. I'd have relapses, so... Mm-hmm. I went to a nutritionist, a good one, in Milwaukee. He's also a naturopathic doctor now, and been going to him. And he had me read a book, Breaking the Vicious Cycle by Elaine Gutschall. And I read that book, and I basically got off of all grains, sugars, and did what was called a specific carbohydrate diet. And 2 years ago, I had a colonoscopy done, and everything was all clear. When I woke up, I asked the doctor, the GI doctor, if I had any signs of colitis. He said, no, everything's all clear. No,
yep,
problem.
See that, Tom? See that? No, you know what I have to say? My husband would be like, you know, high-fiving you and chest-bumping you in the air. Tom, thank you for sharing that. Look, if you have a brain tumor and you start eating healthy, is that going to reverse it? There is not much proof of that. However, it's incredible we are what we eat. It is incredible. And my husband would be fainting. My husband would fall in love with me all over again if he heard me saying this, because he's been preaching to me for years, and I have been very stubborn about that. Corky, watching on Free Speech TV in Rochester, New York. Hey, Corky, good afternoon.
Hello. How are you doing today?
Good. How are you doing?
Not bad. We all got to be careful about these polls, because a great deal of the population all has cell phones. And I can't remember ever hearing anybody polled on a cell phone.
Well, the polls, yeah. I mean, not just a 3 to 4% margin of error. It's not just the polls and the market sampling group that they're taking that sampling from, Corky, but it's also how is the question posed? A very good point that you bring up. For example, if you asked people, how do you like the Affordable Care Act? It was, do you like the Affordable Care Act? There were far more yeses than they were if you said, do you like Obamacare? So it's the packaging and the presentation of that question in a poll as well. Very good point. Let's go to Imperial Beach, California, with Michael, closer to the border than me, watching on Free Speech TV, but a great place to surf. Hi, Michael. Good afternoon.
Hey, Leslie. I'd like a woman's perspective on a question I asked Tom before on the ISIS issue.
Okay.
Now, if our Congress is out of session again, and we are at war again, who are our allies? Saudi Arabia, who beheaded, I believe, 19 people in a soccer stadium last month. So we're going to team up with them to take out people that behead people, when Saudi Arabia is the worst example. What do you think, Leslie?
First of all, we're doing business with China, and China is a communist country that, although they've recently changed it, would force people to abort their children if they, you know, abort a fetus if they didn't, you know, want to, certainly still has great human rights violations. Yet we do business with them, and we team up with them to reduce carbon emissions for the greater good on that issue. Having said that,
okay,
I feel it's necessary. Right. It's necessary for us to partner with countries that have the ability financially, militarily, or financially to buy the weaponry to defeat this enemy, ISIS. And therefore, for the greater good with regard to terrorism, yes, I think we work with Saudi Arabia. One. Two, I don't like the way many countries run. I don't always like the way this country runs, even though I'm American. I'm proud to be. And as a woman, I could not do this on the radio in many countries, most likely Saudi Arabia, at least not giving opinions the way that I do, and so strongly, and sometimes against my leaders and government. But there are many things I don't like in Saudi Arabia, and the tide is turning. We've got to give them time. I mean, not just that Rome wasn't built in a day, but, you know, the westernized world wasn't as westernized, and many countries that are part of the westernized world now took decades to enter the rest of the world. We have a more moderate faction of these countries in the youth, and I think the internet has greatly helped with that, by the way, as has television and film, that we're becoming a smaller world. Do I like the fact that they cut off people's hands or fingers when they steal? No, but I got to tell you this. Look at their crime rate compared to ours. Do not get me wrong. I'm not a barbaric person. I'm simply saying that right now, ISIS is hurting men, women, and children, innocent men, women, and children in the world. And we, as Americans, I believe, have a responsibility as part of the international community to stop that. If we have to work with a nation like Saudi Arabia that has practices that we don't agree with, then so be it. That is not our government to change. And if we want to do that, then we're getting into a very dangerous area, because if we have the freedom to do that with another nation, then that gives the freedom to that nation if the tables and the situation is reversed in the future. And that's a slippery slope.
Gotcha. Can I ask you one last question?
Very quickly.
Okay, yes. So the way they treat their women over there, though, they make them wear black in the desert when the men wear white,
flexi,
and a burqa with only their eyeballs able to be seen. Isn't that crazy, man?
It is crazy. However, if you've spoken to some of these people or been to some of these countries as I have, they find it as odd that we women wear Levi's, that we let our daughters dress like Britney Spears, have sex with men before marriage. And by the way we treat women in the United States is pretty horrific. I'm not saying we're wearing burkas, but a woman every 6 seconds is beaten in the United States, and only 1 in 10 rapes is reported, and the NFL ticket sales went up regardless of Rice smacking down his woman. I'm Leslie Marshall.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
A few more minutes with me here on the Tom Hartman Show. Thank you for tuning in, and I hope you'll keep listening. We have more to come. I'm Leslie Marshall. Hey, I'm Leslie Marshall. Thank you for watching on Free Speech TV today. Let's get to some of your calls. And we go in Chicago to Gary watching on FSTV. Hi, good afternoon. Hello, Gary. Gary. Hey.
The privatizing of all things, putting an end to labor unions and education and in the post office, cuts in all social programs for the sake of tax breaks for the rich, you know, fossil fuels, you know, eliminating life on the planet, you know, for the sake of corporate profit, and Wall Street, you know, just the government just printing up money, giving it to Wall Street while they're cutting my Social Security and Medicare. I mean, you know, the Bible says that the end won't come unless a falling away comes first. I think this is a falling away, and, you know, part of the Ebola and weather events and all the catastrophes we're experiencing, I think they're all interconnected.
Well, we definitely, you know, climate change, for example, is of our own doing, right? And I definitely feel that the privatization and corporatization are hurting us, and it's not just a feeling. We're definitely seeing that. Let's go to Claremont, California, with Michael, not far from where I'm sitting right now. Michael, good afternoon.
Hi, Leslie.
Hey, Michael. How are you watching on Free Speech TV?
I'm good. How are you
today? Good.
I'm actually calling in defense of mosquitoes.
Oh, okay.
from the last segment, you had stated that you hate bugs, and
I do.
Most people do, and that we should get rid of all the mosquitoes. In any case, the fact is, I just wanted to say that every living thing has its place in our very delicately balanced and.
Could you tell me the place of the mosquito then in the grand scheme of things?
Okay, well, a little bit. You know, now mosquitoes take a tiny, as far as humans go, they take a tiny amount of our blood.
Okay.
And basically transfer some of our energy into the natural world. And in the process, they feed many other animals like birds and spiders. And no, I'm no big fan of spiders either, but as an
No,
aside,
we could get rid of them too.
I
mean, these are not like bees. Honeybees pollinate. You know what I mean? And, you know, and birds have its purpose. And I have a lot of birds, you know, outside of my home, I have to say. And the birds seem to do fairly well. I think they'd survive without the mosquitoes. I think they could have a mosquito-less diet. I'm confident of that.
Okay. Well, actually, they would not. And I would inform you all.
They would not. Okay.
If all the spiders on Earth were to disappear tomorrow, human beings would, in a relatively short period of time, be literally knee-deep in other bugs. So if you hate bugs, you can't hate mosquitoes.
I have to say, I had a good laugh when I went to Bugs Life with my kids at Universal in Southern California, because
there you go.
They have a thing that, you know, we've been here a lot before. There's more of us than you. We're going to be here long after. And I got to tell you, I believe it. Michael, thank you. I think that's cute. I'm calling a defense of the mosquitoes. Let's go quickly with 1 minute to Jerry watching on Free Speech TV in Tucson. Go ahead quickly. One comment, Jerry.
Did you say Jerry in Arizona?
Yes, Jerry in Arizona. Very quickly.
Yeah, well, this is Pace in Arizona, north of Phoenix.
Okay.
But anyway, I'm kind of a news junkie, and part of my problem is I've only heard one report. In reference to Isaac, ISOL, IS, you know, whoever you want to call them, depending on, you know, who you are. But anyway, who
all
they
right, Jerry, I love you. I love you, but you're proving that a man cannot follow directions and won't ask for them. I said, quickly! That's like I tell my kids, hurry up and slow down. I'm Leslie Marshall. We'll be back in just a moment. Here I'm sitting in on the Tom Hartman Show. Hey, I'm Leslie Marshall, sitting in for Tom Hartman here on the Tom Hartman Radio Show. Let's continue with the calls. And we go to Tim, who is listening on the Progressive Voices Network, progressivevoices.com. I'm a part of not just that app, but I'm a part of progressivevoices.com. Proud to be. Tim, how you doing? Good afternoon and welcome.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi. Is this, I'm on?
You're on.
Oh, yeah. I have a personal experience with overuse of antibiotics.
Okay.
It was kind of strange because I was about 30 and I had my wisdom teeth pulled and my dentist put me on antibiotics. And I noticed that, you know, after a couple days or a week or so, you know, just to make sure no infection occurred, I started to break out pimples. So I went back to my, doctor. He put me on a stronger antibiotic. And it worked, and it got worse. And then he put me on another stronger antibiotic, and it got worse. And he cried uncle because I was beginning. I was using paper towels to dry my. You know, it was getting really bad. So my doctor cried uncle and sent me to a dermatologist to put me on Accutane. Which in and of itself has side effects like sunburns and liver, stuff like that. And, I treat antibiotics like a plague. I mean, if I was exposed to anthrax, of course I would take something. But, people just, the overuse or the abuse of antibiotics thinking that, you know, like my daughter is going to be the next Miss USA. She needs antibiotics because her face is breaking out. It's crazy. It's just you know, nuts. If I'm making any sense.
No, you are, and I think a lot of people agree with you on that. Thank you, Tim, and appreciate the. So sorry, Tim. When I hit a button, you're already gone. So you know it's awful. I apologize for doing that so quick. Let's go to Patrick on KTNF in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Hi, Patrick. How you doing? Good afternoon. Oh, I can't hear him. Patrick, hold on. I'll come back to you. You've got to turn your radio down. There's a delay there, and it can be kind of crazy. Or should we try him again? Let's go. Patrick, you with us? Patrick? Nah. Patrick, I think, went to get a snack. Let's go to Chuck, listening on Sirius in Shreveport, Louisiana. Hi, Chuck. Good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. I just wanted to reiterate a point that you made a while ago, the fact that we kill about 30,000 people a year in car accidents. Yet we don't outlaw cars. We don't declare war on cars. In the 10 years since 9/11, we've killed about 300,000 people in car accidents. Yet whether you listen to conservative, liberal, or in between the news, they seem to preach a message of fear. And the fact is, sooner or later, as your last caller said, since the invention of antibiotics for about 100 years, we've staved off major pandemics. But no, I'm not a doomsdayer by any means, but just realist, sooner or later the bugs are going to catch up and we're going to have a major pandemic, whether it be Ebola, a reinvention of the 1917 flu. Something's going to get us sooner or later, and the fact is, unfortunately, the world as a whole will probably be a better place after it was. It's going to kill off a vast amount of us, and the strong will survive as nature meant it to.
All right. Thank you. So this is just part of nature. Let's go to Joe Beth, listening also on Sirius in St. Petersburg, Florida. Hi, Joe Beth.
Hey, how you doing, Leslie?
Good.
Yeah, I just wanted to respond to the guy that's very worried about Ebola crossing the border. One of the things that people automatically assume that the best health care is in the United States. Actually, Mexico and many Central American countries have very good health care systems, universal health care. They can go and get treated for free. And many people from border states, like I grew up in, actually cross the border to go get health care because it's less expensive.
Well, definitely. I mean, living in Southern California, I know people that, you know, order things through Canada, but it's tougher through the mail because the government puts a stop to it. But definitely people drive, not as much with the drug cartels, but used to drive a lot to TJ, Tijuana, to get medication because Mexico's socialized, you know, foreign medicine. You go out to the country and you say, hey.
There's doctors, there's dentists.
Yeah, well, you're fine. You can get an antibiotic without a prescription in socialized medicine. I mean, whether it's in Mexico, Italy, I've done it myself. But this is also a problem with our access to antibiotics without a script in that situation.
Actually, and Guatemala has a very good health care system, so he doesn't need to worry so much that those people will be clamoring to get into the United States where they won't get any care because they don't have health insurance. So they'll probably stay there, and he can probably relax about the whole running across the border thing.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate the call and appreciate the comment. I love the fact everybody is everywhere, you know, with this. Let's go next to Matthew on Free Speech TV. He's watching in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Hi, Matthew. Good afternoon.
Hi, Leslie. I love the show. I wanted to ask you, you brought up earlier about perversions in the religions, and you've said that you read the Quran and the Bibles and that you're Jewish. So
no, I'm not Jewish. I'm half Jewish, half Christian.
You also lived in over there. I think you probably have a better perspective on what these perversions are, because I don't think a lot of people really understand how these things are twisted around.
Very quickly, because we have less than a minute. Honor killings. You know, when you say they're in the Quran, they're in the Bible technically too. And they're not supposed to be, you know, practiced. I mean, just like any, you know, religion, they're based on a different time. Marrying children, Lot slept with his daughters, yet he was spared by God, if you believe the story of Sodom and Gomorrah. That's incest where I come from, folks. So, you know, perversions of Islam are that, you know, Muhammad raped Aisha, who was his first wife, a 9-year-old. There is no evidence of that. As a matter of fact, he would frown upon the way men are treating women if you read the Quran and the way Muhammad treated his wife, Aisha. Who, by the way, definitely wear the pants in that family. I'm Leslie Marshall. Thank you for sitting in and listening to me as I sat in for Tom Hartman. I hope you listen to my show coming up 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern. Go to LeslieMarshallShow.com/stream. I hope you'll listen. I hope you'll call in there as well. Have a great rest of the week.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.